venture back into the history of human thought centuries before the Common Era. We find there are certain thinkers who represent a whole new way of wrestling with core questions about what is and why it is so. Aristotle called them the physikoi, the physicists, so named because of the Greek word physis, meaning nature. They are our early scientists, those so-called pre-Socratic philosophers who, rejecting the supernatural, were seeking instead natural explanations for how things are. In their inquiry into the essence of things, they imagine that all that is originated from one common element. And Thales of Miletus, the initial one of them, regarded in fact as the first of the Greek philosophers, combined mathematics, geometry, and deductive reasoning to draw a definitive conclusion. The beginning is water. Long even before that, an ancient Hebrew would sing of how we got our start. For this bard in the beginning, while earth was still formless, prior even to light, there was already water. What is true for the whole planet, expressed in ancient philosophy and ancient religious mythology, is true for each person, formed into lines of poetry. Robert Bly tells of this child floating inside the Pacific of the womb. "Before I was born, I was water," writes poet Jim Harrison. "And I was born from water," attests poet Lisa Lowitz. This we know, that we were first formed while floating in the safe sea of amniotic fluid, that we entered this world upon the breaking of waters, that before life itself, before our lives, there is always water. "Blessed be water," prays the late John O'Donohue, our first mother. Blessed be water. Not my water, not your water, simply water. Water for all of time. This we know, that every water, as Lucille Clifton has it, every water is the same water coming round. In Jeanette Wall's highly acclaimed so-called true life novel, Half Broke Horses, a character tells that truth. "The water you kids were playing in," he said, "had probably been to Africa and the North Pole. Genghis Khan or St. Peter or even Jesus may have drunk it. Cleopatra may have bathed in it. Crazy Horse might have watered his pony with it." Yes, that one water, all the water there is for all of time, birthing and rebirthing and rebirthing again. It leads Tracy K. Smith to assert, "I was born like a wide wake, rippling infinitely into the distance, everything that ever was still is." All the water that ever was still is. And it is the only water there is. So from the esoteric expanse of pre-Socratic philosophy and the metaphoric mythology of sacred text and the poignant words of many poets, I invite us to bring this focus closer to home, closer to our hearts. Call to mind for a moment water. Some water. Maybe the susurration of the surf on a walk along the beach. Maybe the roar of a river, the soft gurgle of a stream. Call to mind some water. It could be the sun rising over a lake or the moon's reflection in a simple pond. It could be the clean water of a bath or a shower or the steam rising from the kettle boiling water for a cup of tea. It could be a vast ocean rolling beneath a ship or boat of some kind. Call to mind some water. What is your relationship to this particular water? How does it make you feel? Imagine you're in the presence of that water right now. Take it in. See it. Enjoy it. Just last weekend, I saw it again, the languid, dark water of the Saukahatchee River, laving knees of towering cypress as it wanders its way through Low State, South Carolina. Swelled by recent rain, it was spilling its course beyond its customary boundaries and into the surrounding loam, become also the shimmering expanse of a swamp, muddy and fecund with life. Oh, intones Langston Hughes, I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. And he goes on to name some of them, the Euphrates, the Congo, the Nile, the Mississippi. The water you imagined in our little exercise a moment ago, the water you imagined, whatever it is a part of those rivers. It was those rivers I saw slowly drifting by on a stunning early spring Sunday in Low State, South Carolina. And not only that, those same rivers are in us, literally in us, pumped in pulses in us, circulating the stuff of life through us. Because, of course, there is only water. Water, not my water, your water, Langston Hughes's water, the same water for billions of years, recycled in the planet's breathing helix, as Marilyn Nelson puts it. We are utterly dependent on the same water. Our lives are utterly entwined with the same water. No better example exists for our religion's affirmation of an interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Eventually, wrote Norman MacLean in his poignant account, eventually all things merge into one and a river runs through it. If this is true, if there truly is but one river, from the basement of time, then it is not just the Euphrates, Congo, Nile, and Mississippi that are in us. The Dan River is in us, silted with ash, byproduct of our unbroken addiction to coal. The Missouri River at Lake Oahe is in us, there where an oil pipeline is being constructed over the intense objections of the people of the Standing Rock Reservation. The befouled waters flowing into Flint, Michigan are in us, harming health as a byproduct of bipartisan lack of concern. the Rio Grande is in us, marking a border that is evidently not nearly distinct enough. Yes, it's not just the water that moves and nourishes us. It's not just the beautiful and the bountiful water. All the water of the world is one, and our complete interdependence demands that we pay much closer attention. Meeni Wachoni, say the Lakota. Say others protesting that black snake, the Dakota Access Pipeline. Meeni Wachoni, water is life. It was in July of 2010 that the United Nations would come together and declare their collective recognition of the right to safe and clean drinking water and sanitation as a human right that is essential for the full enjoyment of life and of all human rights. The nations of the world expressed that they are now deeply concerned that approximately 884 million people lack access to safe drinking water, and that more than 2.6 billion do not have access to basic sanitation. Alarmed that approximately 1.5 million children under 5 years of age die each year as a result of water and sanitation-related diseases. We cannot affirm our recognition that we are part of an interdependent web and ignore the implications where water is concerned. We cannot profess our vision for societal and environmental transformation and ignore the fact that the weight of environmental degradation falls far more heavily on the already marginalized, the already vulnerable. The tens of thousands who have converged on Standing Rock seeking to block the construction of an unwanted oil pipeline have been referring to themselves as water protectors. It is a role our religion insists that we play. We, that is, who actually affirm an interdependent web. As water protectors, we must find ways to resist a contract that values profits for the shareholders of oil companies over the health of marginalized people. We must resist a capitalist equation pretending some people's access to safe drinking water simply matters less than that of others. We must resist the economic equation reliant upon the privatization of water. We must resist the poisonous convenience of bottled water and the calamitous implications of the commodification of our resources. We can't drink profits. We can't sit by, swim in, sail upon profits. We can't bathe in or make tea with profits. We can't save millions of children from waterborne diseases with profits. Profits won't assume the safety of a water supply on a reservation. Profits won't remove coal ash from a carelessly contaminated river. Rebecca Solnit calls it out, if gold has been prized because it is the most inert element, changeless and incorruptible, water is prized for the opposite reason. Its fluidity, mobility, changeability that make it a necessity and a metaphor for life. To value gold over water, she says, is to value economy over ecology. That which can be locked up over that which connects all things. Who owns this water? Asked Barbara Kingsolver. How can I call it mine when its fate is to run through rivers and living bodies, so many already and so many more to come? Go back now for an imaginative moment to your water. The stream, lake, river, ocean, or bath you reflected upon a moment ago. Sit or stand before it, gaze into it, take it in. Now imagine, because it is in fact so, every water is the same water coming round. There's no separation, no division, no wall that can be built to keep that life-giving water apart from all other waters within and beyond our lives. In one drop of water, observed Cahill Gibran, in one drop of water are found all the secrets of all the oceans.